Okay, let's unpack this. Imagine waking up, grabbing your coffee, scrolling through your feed, and realizing that while you were sleeping, the fundamental operating system of the world just
Upgraded.
upgraded. And I'm not talking about a new iOS or a sleek new interface. I mean the actual rules of engagement for warfare, the bedrock of the global economy, and even the definition of what is real on the internet, it all shifted overnight.
It sounds super dramatic when you put it that way, but honestly, you're underselling it.
Really?
Yeah, we are looking at a very specific moment in time here, February 2026, and the source material on the table today, the 2026 Tekken Report, it doesn't read like a standard tech newsletter.
No, it doesn't.
It reads like a ruthless autopsy of the last 24 hours.
Ruthless autopsy. That is a visceral way to put it, because usually when we do these deep dives into tech news for you guys, we're wading through a lot of marketing fluff.
Oh, constantly.
It's always, look at this shiny new gadget, or here's a promise about the future. But this report feels, I don't know, it feels heavy.
Because we are way past the hype phase. That's the critical context for you listening right now. For the last few years, we've been in the wow, look what AI can do phase.
Right.
This report makes it incredibly clear that we are now firmly in the consequences phase. The digital world isn't just sitting behind a screen anymore. It is colliding violently with the physical world.
And that collision is messy. We're seeing it everywhere in this stack of research, from power grids in the Middle East to the stock exchange in Mumbai, and strangely enough, all the way to the gaming console sitting in my living room, which I still cannot get an upgrade for, by the way.
We'll get to your gaming woes, I promise.
Good.
But you're right. On the surface, we have six seemingly separate events. There's a cyber attack, a new EU law, a market crash, a data center deal, a hardware shortage, and a treaty.
A lot of ground to cover.
Yeah, but our mission today is to show you that these aren't six different stories. They are six chapters of the exact same story about the new economy of 2026.
Okay, so let's start with the event that apparently woke half the intelligence community up at 4 a.m., the UAE. The report details a massive cyber attack on the United Arab Emirates. We're talking critical infrastructure, energy distribution, central banking, aviation.
Basically, the nervous system of the entire nation.
Exactly. And here's the headline. They stopped it. They neutralized it early this morning.
Which is great news, obviously.
But I have to play devil's advocate here. Infrastructure attacks happen all the time. Nations have firewalls. Why does this specific attack get the headline spot in the Tekken report? Was it just the scale of it?
It wasn't the scale, it was the species of the attacker. If you remember Stuxnet from years ago.
The centrifuge hack.
Right. That was human code written by brilliant human engineers targeting very specific hardware.
Oh,
This
wow.
was different. This was offensive AI.
Offensive AI. I got to be honest, that sounds like a marketing buzzword you'd see on a startup pitch deck.
Yeah.
Are we absolutely sure this wasn't just a very well-coordinated team of human hackers? We've seen sophisticated hacks before.
I was totally skeptical too until I looked at the timestamps in the appendix of the report. The attack hit three distinct infrastructure nodes simultaneously: banking, energy, and aviation.
Okay.
But here is the kicker. It used unique custom-written code for each specific firewall architecture it encountered. And it did all of this within about 40 milliseconds.
40 milliseconds.
Yeah, no human team can coordinate that fast. This wasn't a team, it was a swarm.
A swarm acting as an autonomous battlefield commander. Okay, that's actually terrifying. But
Yeah.
how does it actually get in? I assume these systems are locked down tight. It's not just guessing a password.
No, the brute force days are long over. The entry vector was LLM spear phishing. And this is where it gets highly personal. Usually, phishing emails are generic, like click here to reset your password.
Right. Or you get an email from the CEO asking you to go buy gift cards.
Exactly, with a bunch of typos, you spot them a mile away. But this offensive AI used large language models to scan LinkedIn profiles, lead internal communications, even old tweets of UAE executives.
What?
It didn't just write an email, it wrote the email. It used the exact industry jargon, the correct tone, and this is the part that literally gave me chills. It included inside jokes and references to meetings that happened 3 years ago.
So it's mimicking human intimacy. It's weaponizing the social graph just to get someone to hold the door open.
Precisely. It's undetectable to a human reader because it sounds exactly like your colleague down the hall, but that's just the entry point. Once the malware was inside, it did something technically nightmarish. The report calls it algorithmic polymorphism.
Polymorphism. Okay, I know in biology that means changing shape or form. What does that look like in code?
In this context, it means the code rewrites its own binary structure. Think about traditional antivirus software. It works like a fingerprint scanner.
Okay.
It looks for a specific file signature, like a known bad guy. If the fingerprint matches, it blocks it.
So the antivirus has a database of mugshots, essentially.
Right. But this malware used a neural engine to rewrite itself every single time it moved from one computer to another. It's like a criminal who gets complete plastic surgery and changes their fingerprints every time they walk through a doorway.
So every time it jumps to a new machine, it has a completely different fingerprint.
Yes. It's the exact same destructive payload, but structurally it looks like a completely new, never-before-seen file. Static defenses, those mugshot databases, they just didn't stand a chance.
Which brings us to the only reason the UAE actually survived this. The report mentions a cyber defense shield. I'm guessing this wasn't just, you know, a better firewall.
No. Firewalls are basically dead. The UAE use a defense system based on neural network anomaly detection, basically fighting fire with fire, or rather, fighting an algorithm with an algorithm.
It's machine-on-machine warfare, so humans are just, what, spectators?
In the exact moment of the attack,
yeah.
Yes. You cannot react fast enough to a piece of code that reinvents itself every millisecond. The big takeaway for you here is that security is no longer about walls, it's about reflexes.
Okay, so that's the attack on infrastructure. But while the UAE was fending off that swarm, there was a massive move regarding the attack on truth. So this one feels a bit more hopeful, actually, but also incredibly complex.
It is, because while the malware was rewriting itself, the EU and India were activating a new law right at midnight, mandatory AI watermarking.
This is huge. The report says that platforms like X, TikTok, and YouTube now lose their safe harbor immunity if they host unmarked deepfakes. That's the legal side of things. But I really want to get into the tech, because the report mentioned something called the C2PA standard.
Yes, the C2PA standard.
Is this just like a little made by AI stamp in the corner of a video?
No, and that's a crucial distinction to make. A visual watermark is useless. You can crop it out, you can blur it, put a digital sticker over it. The C2PA standard is about cryptographic provenance. Think of it less like a stamp and more like DNA.
DNA.
Yeah, they are embedding cryptographic hashes directly into the pixel structure of the image or the frame sequence of the video.
So it's baked into the file itself.
Deeply baked in. The term is manifest injection. The metadata, which shows exactly when the file was created, what device was used, and which AI engine generated it, say Midjourney V6 or OpenAI Sora, is fused with the content.
But hackers are smart. Can't they just script that metadata out,
yeah,
like scrubbing the HSIF data from a photo before you post it?
They can certainly try, but if you try to use screen capture software or manipulate the pixels to strip that tag, the hash structure breaks. It's like a wax seal on an envelope. You can't open the letter without breaking the seal.
And when the hash breaks, the platform knows.
Immediately. The algorithm flags it as manipulated and restricts its reach. We're moving away from the era of unconditional freedom on the internet to the era of cryptographic authentication. If you can't mathematically prove where a video came from, it's treated as suspect.
It's like we're finally getting a notary public for the internet.
Yeah.
Okay, so we have warfare and we have truth. Now let's talk about money, because while all this was happening, the Asian markets were waking up to an absolute bloodbath.
Bloodbath isn't even an exaggeration here. We saw $56 billion in market cap vanish from Indian IT giants like TCS, Infosys, and Wipro in just a few hours. That is a staggering amount of wealth to lose in a single morning.
And the culprit wasn't a scandal or a massive lawsuit. It was literally a product launch. Anthropic unveiled something called orchestration agents.
This is the economic pivot point of coming 26.
But hold on. Companies have been promising AI coding for years. We've had Copilot. We've had ChatGPT writing Python scripts. Why did this specific release crash the market by $56 billion in a morning? Why the panic now?
Because previous AI tools were assistants. They helped a human developer write code a bit faster. What Anthropic released are agents.
That's the practical difference. Is it just a semantics thing?
Not at all. An assistant waits for you to type. It helps you fix a bug. An agent has a goal. You tell it, migrate this database to the cloud, and it goes away. Plans the architecture, writes the SQL, tests it, and deploys it all by itself. It doesn't make the developer faster. It removes the need for the developer entirely for routine maintenance tasks.
So the entire business model of these outsourcing giants body shopping, where you hire thousands of junior devs and just rent them out, that's effectively dead.
It's a massive shift in value. For decades, the model was based on human volume. You needed 1,000 people to maintain a legacy banking system. Now, with the multi-agent framework, you just spin up a virtual squad. You have a system architecture agent to plan everything, a coding agent to build it, and a security penetration agent to try and break it.
And they don't sleep. They don't take coffee breaks.
Yeah.
And they definitely don't need an HR department.
And crucially, they cost pennies in API tokens compared to salaried human employees. The report says these agents can deploy thousands of lines of code into complex environments like AWS or Azure with zero downtime. Mm. If you are a legacy firm selling human hours, you simply cannot compete with a firm selling algorithmic compute capacity.
There's a line in the report that really stuck with me. It says the role of project manager is effectively dead, replaced by AI orchestration architects.
It's a fundamental restructuring of the workforce. The value isn't in writing the code anymore. The value is in designing the swarm of agents that will write the code.
But not everyone is taking this lying down. While the IT service sector was crashing, the Tata Group, one of India's biggest conglomerates, was making a massive power move in the completely other direction. They signed a huge deal with OpenAI.
This is the counterbalance to the crash. Tata isn't trying to compete with body shopping anymore. They are pivoting directly to infrastructure. They announced a 100-megawatt data center scalable to a full gigawatt.
A gigawatt?
Yeah, that's enough power to run a major city.
But why build it in India? Why not just use the cloud like everyone else has been doing for a decade? Why spend billions on concrete and servers?
Because of trust. This introduces the concept of sovereign AI. Governments and massive corporations like Tata have realized they simply cannot trust Western servers with their deepest secrets. They don't want their industrial data or national security secrets sitting in a server farm in Virginia.
So they're bringing the AI to the data, rather than sending their data to the AI.
Exactly.
The report mentions air-gapped RRAG pipelines. That sounds incredibly technical, but I think it's pretty important for understanding this shift. Can we break that down?
Sure. So think of Jaguar Land Rover, which Tata owns. They have massive libraries of CAD files, highly proprietary designs for cars that won't even come out until 2030. You do not want that on the open internet.
Right, that's the crown jewels. You keep that locked up.
Exactly. An air-gapped RRAG allows them to take a powerful AI model, literally cut the cord to the internet, and let that model learn from those private files locally. It uses something called vectorization.
Vectorization. I've heard that term thrown around a lot lately. Give me the analogy for how that works.
Imagine a brilliantly smart librarian who has read every single secret document in your company vault. You can ask her incredibly complex questions, and she answers based only on those documents without ever leaving the room or picking up a phone. She is super intelligent, but she's completely isolated. That is vectorized, air-gapped AI.
So it gets all the intelligence of the ChatGPT, but it operates in a sealed room.
Yes. The expert insight from the report here is that data centers are becoming national infrastructure. In the 20th century, you needed oil refineries to be a sovereign power. In 2026, if you don't have sovereign AI compute capacity, you are, as the report puts it, digitally colonized.
Digitally colonized. That is a really heavy term. It frames this entire thing as a resource war. And speaking of resources, let's talk about where this hits home for the listener. Because all this talk of data centers and sovereign AI has a victim we might not expect. The gamer.
Yes. The Steam Deck crisis.
I know a few friends who have been trying to get their hands on the new Steam Deck OLED, and it's basically impossible right now. The report confirms it.
Yeah.
Severe shortages. But it's not because Valve messed up their manufacturing, is it?
No, Valve is a victim here. This is purely a supply chain story. And to understand it, we have to understand why the UAE can have that cyber shield and why Tata can build that massive data center. Then they're all fighting for the exact same limited resource.
The chips?
Specifically, the packaging of the chips. The bottleneck is something called CoWoS, chip on wafer on substrate.
CoWoS sounds like a brand of breakfast cereal. Break that down for us. Why is the packaging the bottleneck? I thought the hard part was usually printing the actual silicon.
We're actually pretty good at printing the raw silicon now. The problem is stitching those pieces together. Think of it like building a skyscraper. We have plenty of steel and glass, that's the raw chips. But CoWoS is the highly specialized construction crew that knows how to weld that steel into a 100-story building without it collapsing. It allows for 3D stacking of high bandwidth memory or HBM3E.
And I'm guessing there aren't many of these specialized construction crews around.
There are basically two or three foundries on Earth that can do this advanced packaging at scale. Places like TSMC. And right now, NVIDIA, the UAE government, and Tata have booked every single hour of their time for the next 18 months.
I see exactly where this is going. If I'm a manufacturer and I have a choice between packaging a chip for a $600 gaming console or a chip for a $30,000 AI server unit,
you follow the money. The AI titans are pre-booking the entire supply. The consumer electronics companies, Valve, Sony, Microsoft, they are getting pushed to the very back of the queue.
So because a data center needs to process a large language model to write those phishing emails we talked about earlier, I can't play my video game.
In a nutshell, yes. Gamers are now second-class citizens to AI. It's a zero-sum game. The demand for intelligence is cannibalizing the supply chain for entertainment.
It really drives home the point that cloud computing isn't just some ethereal, invisible thing. It's made of physical silicon, and there just isn't enough silicon to go around.
Which brings us to the final and perhaps most significant event in the report, the geopolitical response to this massive scarcity.
The New Delhi Declaration.
Yeah.
88 nations coming together to sign this. That's a massive coalition.
It is. This is the Global South pushing back. They look at what's happening, the hoarding of chips by Silicon Valley, the monopoly on the frontier AI models, and they see an existential threat. The declaration is asking for compute equity.
Compute equity. But isn't this just standard protectionism? Are they really asking for equity? Or are they just trying to tax Silicon Valley? It feels a bit like a shakedown.
It's way deeper than a tax. Just think about it based on what we've talked about today. If you can't get the chips, you can't build the sovereign AI. If you can't build the sovereign AI, you can't defend your banks from the malware we discussed in the intro. You effectively become a vassal state.
So they aren't just asking for cheaper iPhones or electronics. They are stating that computing power is now a prerequisite for national sovereignty.
Exactly. They are demanding subsidized cloud infrastructure and, crucially, an end to the hoarding of H100 and B200 chips. They realize that a nation's right to exist, its ability to defend itself, and its ability to trade all depend on its compute capacity right now. The New Delhi Declaration is basically 88 nations standing up and saying, we will not be left behind in this new era.
Okay, so let's step back and connect the dots on this entire deep dive for everyone listening. We started with code, literally rewriting itself to attack a power grid. We saw that the only valid defense was more AI. We saw the job market for humans collapse in the outsourcing sector because of these autonomous agents. And we saw the rise of sovereign data centers to protect national secrets.
And we saw that all of this, the defense, the agents, the data centers, relies on a specific type of chip packaging that is in such short supply that it's causing a consumer crisis and a massive geopolitical uprising.
When you lay it all out like that, the overarching theme is undeniable. Digital is no longer separate from physical. For a really long time, we treated the internet as this parallel virtual place. But now the resource war of the 21st century isn't just about oil or land. It is about compute and authenticity.
That's the new currency. Do you have the sheer power to run the intelligence? And can you cryptographically prove that what you have is real?
And those who have it, the ones deploying offensive AI and building sovereign data centers, are winning. Those relying on old static defenses or old business models of selling human hours are losing billions overnight.
It's a very harsh reality check.
It is a lot to process.
Yeah.
But I want to leave you with a thought that came up while I was reading about those orchestration agents. We talked about how the malware in the UAE rewrote its own code to survive the firewalls. And we talked about how corporate AI agents can self-organize to build complex software without human managers.
Right. Autonomous adaptation.
Exactly. So here is the question that's going to keep me up tonight. If the malware can rewrite itself to survive, and the corporate agents can self-organize to build the systems, at what point do we stop being the architects of this world and start becoming just the tenants?
That is the uncomfortable question. Because if the system updates itself, who is really in charge of the version control?
Something to think about while you're waiting for that Steam Deck to finally ship. Go check your own updates, everyone. We'll see you in the next deep dive.